Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. For almost 2 years now, many companies have faced a substantial or even a full switch to remote working, which has brought many challenges and opportunities. In particular, many organizations and HR teams wondered how to successfully grow, scale, onboard, and engage staff remotely. But we found an Irish success story who have overcome these challenges in a big way in 2021. So today we're delighted to be joined by Rory Conroy, site lead for Diligent Corporation, whose European hub is based in the lovely Galway. Since taking on the role back in February this year, Rory's hired just under 200 people, entirely remote, making the company a major contributor to employment in the west of Ireland. He has more than 19 years of leadership experience with senior roles at major tech companies, including Google and SiteMinder. And having started your career in radio, you should be the perfect podcast guest for us, Rory. So thanks for joining us. How are you?
Excellent, John. Thanks very much. Delighted to be here.
Brilliant stuff. And of course, we're also joined, as always, by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good morning, Owen. And good morning, Rory. Great to have you here with us.
Thanks, Mary.
We'll jump right in and we come to yourself, Rory, if that's all right, to kick us off. So look, tell us a little bit about Diligent, the year it's been, what were the goals, what were the challenges?
Excellent. Thank you, Owen. It's been a roller coaster year, part exciting and also part white knuckle ride in terms of the clip and the pace that we've approached business at over the last 12 months. Diligent announced its arrival into the Irish market a little over a year ago, in November of 2020. And I think a lot of people were quite taken aback that we were committing 200 jobs to the west of Ireland, to Galway, in the time we can all cast our minds back to entering into Christmas and case increases. It's a bit like deja vu at the moment, probably, but it wasn't too dissimilar last year. So I think we certainly did turn a few heads in terms of how ambitious our plans were. And I guess that was based on quite an extensive review in terms of identifying Galway as the hub for our European operations. So we reviewed 20 sites in advance of landing on Galway, looking at kind of key criteria around the education system, languages available, the actual culture of the city itself in terms of, very much a desire to be part of a multicultural environment, contribute to it, and a community in general that was something that we could be part of and contribute to, both business and community at large. And it was something, I guess, the kind of matrix of those kind of areas that Galway came out on top. And that decision was made just before the initial lockdown back in 2020, with a 6 to 9 month kind of lead time into the announcement last November. So I joined last February of this year. In all truth, I was quite plugged in for maybe 2-3 months beforehand, given the tasks that we had ahead of recruiting in excess of 200 people remotely. And on top of that, which has been really interesting for me, has been the breadth of roles that we have hired against. I think quite often we can see situations where companies are setting up operations in Ireland and maybe focusing on one or two functions in terms of growth. What I really liked about Diligent and really enjoy about it is that we're certainly backing the talent in Ireland and in the west of Ireland, right across a whole gamut of different departments. So we've hired those 200 roles against customer support, customer success, inside sales, sales development, marketing, HR, finance, accounting, product development. And they range from graduate level positions right up to VPs and global VP positions. So and on top of that, we're running quite a few kind of 24/7 operations out of the West as well. So it's been a huge feat. I think I've never appreciated the importance of project management and planning as much as I have in this role. It's definitely been a learning curve for me as well, but a great learning curve, I think.
Absolutely. So I think
best of course,
yeah, and I think I suppose one of the key things you mentioned earlier was, I suppose, successful onboarding has always been an important task, even long before the pandemic. I know from my own work in internal communications, I always thought of that as kind of a key touch point just for the employee engagement, getting the, it's almost the first impression, I suppose, beyond the interview. I suppose, and similar to that, a challenge that many companies have faced this year is how do we build or even maintain our culture remotely as well? So I suppose, can you talk to us a little bit about the remote onboarding program you drove in particular?
Sure, Owen. Good question. I guess when you're bringing on 200 folks, you have to make sure that that experience is as engaging as it possibly can be, and it is your first impression. So part of the reason why I plugged in prior to joining in February was to be part of a reimagination of that onboarding experience. And we worked closely with a third party consultant in New York, a company called SY Partners, who've done a lot of work with Facebook and Google and other kind of top tech companies to reimagine what that experience feels like. And where we started that is very much at the candidate experience. So even if folks aren't successful, it's important that they have a very engaging and positive relationship and experience of working and, you know, engaging with the brand, full stop. So that was a very important part of the experience that we reimagined. And then particularly from the point of someone accepting an offer, we put into play a series of events that would ensure that they felt engaged and part of the brand before they even started. And again, we all have started our day one in different places, whether it's in school or multiple jobs that we've had since. It's always a heightened level of anxiety and nervousness about it. When you put that into the fully virtual place and you don't have those visual cues and body languages to help settle yourself and build meaningful connections with those around you, you can multiply that quite a bit. So in advance of a new person starting, we do a full briefing with all hiring managers in terms of what's expected of them and their teams for the next, particularly the next 2 weeks, which is week minus one from someone starting and then their first week of onboarding. And then we work and have in place 30, 60, 90 day plans for all individuals coming into the business that are done and developed in advance of that person starting. So in that week minus one, a full agenda and swag and everything is sent out to new hires. That includes kind of daily gifts to open that tie in with the onboarding week one experience, where you have a rocket ship theme in terms of our onboarding experience. So there's different space connotations to it and different touch points the company and the manager has in week minus one to ensure that the employee is introduced to their wider network, that they have a buddy in place, that they have multiple touch points in place, that they meet in advance of starting, and then they meet virtually when they start as we're still in a remote environment. And then when it comes to day one through to day five, in terms of the week one structured onboarding experience, we've redeveloped and reimagined that to be a totally multimedia experience. So that includes podcasts the leaders of the company have recorded specifically to speak to new hires coming into the business. There's a live audience with our CEO, Brian Stafford, on day one, where he calls in every week to new hires to spend time welcoming them, taking their questions. There is a cohort experience, which has been transformational, I think, in terms of how people experience it. So we usually take an intake of around 20 new people every week. And that's between Galway and Budapest and a few other sites that we have. And we create different cohorts. So there are smaller groups of between 4 and 6 individuals that actually have a number of tasks that they complete as a group during the week that culminates in an end of week celebration with a 2-minute recruitment pitch that they need to craft back to entice a friend to join Diligent. So they're incorporating everything they're learning from the week one experience into that pitch at the end of the week. And then we have some fun prizes and bragging rights for the cohort from there on in, which is priceless. So I think we've really tried to rethink about how people experience that first week and using the mediums of podcasts, product simulations, role and function time, cohort experiences, and self-reflection and self-guided to ensure that there's a diversity, but also an immersiveness into the company whilst already laying the tracks for that before somebody starts. So that anxiety of what to expect is taken out of it the best we can. So that's how we've kind of approached it.
That's fantastic. And I think for yourself, Mary, I suppose we've kind of talked on this, spoken on this podcast this month even, and on our blog about HR in many cases getting a stronger kind of seat at the table over the last year or so. And I think from what Rory's saying there, a lot of the important things were around recruitment, retention, culture, onboarding, these kind of things, obviously working with leadership on these things. So I suppose when we hear a case like this from Rory and Diligent, it's yet another example of this opportunity, Mary, isn't it?
Well, it's exciting, Rory, to see an organization embrace you know, the induction, the onboarding, the introduction of a new employee into the organization in such a structured and well thought out and planned way. Because everyone in HR knows that if we don't get that right, the chances of retention going forward reduce, and that people make decisions very quickly in their first days of work and joining a new organization about whether or not they want to be there. I think back to myself in a role I took when I was 28, 29, and on my first day I met with the CEO and was told, well, the stationery cupboard is down there, there's your office, go figure. And I remember thinking to myself, why did I take this job? I was very comfortable where I was before. And in that moment, I knew I had made a mistake. And no organization wants that for an employee. So it's absolutely fantastic to hear about the level of thought, the time that you have taken as an organization to put in place a really thoughtful program that works. And you're 1 year in at this stage. How's your retention rate?
Yeah, agree with everything you say there, Mary. I think our primary focus with Indiligent and the core, we have a whole, I suppose, goal setting process that we cascade from top down over a various set of different goals, is to attract and retain the top talent. And listen, we're constantly evolving that. I think one of the biggest areas that I've focused on and will continue to focus on is frontline management and how they make people feel. And I've said it often to the wider site and to the CEO himself, it doesn't matter what the CEO does or what I do to a certain extent, how people feel about their job every day is directly influenced by their frontline managers. And how we train and hire, and the profile of those frontline managers today has shifted dramatically on the back of the pandemic, because their skill set needs to adapt and change, obviously, to this environment. And there's a heightened sense of risk when it comes to retention of talent, because you don't build up those emotive connections. And we've all stayed in jobs too long because we love the people and the company, not so much loving the work sometimes. And without the lever of being together and in a brand new office, which we're investing in a building in Galway, looking to move in April next year, we've been robbed of those touch points to be able to make people feel a certain way. So that's that is the kind of the center of what we're trying to do and do continuously do a better job at. It's something I think that hasn't always been in the DNA of most companies out there, but if they don't adapt this kind of retention and attraction of top talent, then they continuously lose that war on talent, which has been bandied about ever so frequently. I think us from a retention perspective, I think generally we've done fairly well. I think from a retention perspective, I think it's been an interesting 12 months. Even if we look back at, you know, our growth, and the majority of that 200 headcount growth came in the Jan to June period of 2020. And I think we saw a seismic shift in the candidate opportunity from June, July onwards, as the companies that had laid off staff were starting to bring back the staff they'd laid off and approach people who'd got work elsewhere, given a lot of companies. And I was in one of those in SiteMinder previously that unfortunately had to let go great staff due to market conditions in 2020. So that was one factor. And I think with that came the opening up of lots of sexy roles like marketing and other roles that had been very much paused for 12 months plus, given that discretionary spend from a company perspective had been pulled back on to get into survival mode as we went through the eye of the storm of COVID. So I think those areas kind of did impact us. I'd be lying if I said they hadn't. I think we hired and were probably beneficial of that market that was available in the first half of this year. And then we have been challenged by that shift of dynamic, which has been dramatic. And it's not just an Irish thing, obviously, definitely a global shift, and we can see it in our other markets. But you know what? That's on us. it's on us to ensure that that onboarding experience makes people feel a certain way. It's important that that 30, 60, 90 day plan feels secure, stretch, learning, growth, all the things that people want to be driven by. And I think we probably have a unique opportunity in Diligent where, you know, I'm lucky enough to lecture in NUIG as well across a couple of their master programs. You notice over the last 2 to 3 years, a shift in prioritization of what candidates are looking for coming into the workplace. The importance of things like ESG, you know, what's our environmental, our social strategy from a company perspective. These are things that I think the whole pandemic has caused us all to pause for thought in terms of what we do, what we, you know, why we do what we do, both personally and professionally. And I guess we're looking from a Diligent perspective that essentially our software helps leaders around the world, 700,000 of them, executives and board members, make better decisions when it comes to diversity, when it comes to the environment, when it comes to when it comes to jobs, when it comes to, you know, protecting the company against cyber risk, all real world meaningful things that I think as a business and as an individual working for a company like Diligent personally, you can get very, very invested in and excited about the difference you can make to the world. And it's always been important for me to work for something and believe in something I've worked for. And I think that's something, again, in terms of that war on talent, people need to have and be part of something that is meaningful and making a difference. And I believe that we have that offering in Diligent, both in terms of what our software does, but in terms of what we do as a business and our opportunity to earn the right to contribute positively to the West of Ireland and to Galway. And that starts with how we engage with candidates, how we engage with our own employees, and also how we engage with the community at large, both business and charities and other communities. And that's certainly been something front and center of how we've openly tried to contribute positively to the environment that we've been working in over the last 12 months.
I think, I suppose, kind of similarly, and you kind of touched on it there, Rory, I think D&I, diversity and inclusion, is an issue or an area of work that in particular has kind of seen, we're not even sure what it's seen over the past year or so. I know we've seen reports on from news media that it's been pushed back for certain studies, but we've also spoken to people on this podcast even who are involved in that line of work that say they've helped more companies than ever this year. So I suppose, how big a role has D&I, diversity and inclusion, played in Diligent's kind of remote strategy this year?
Yeah, it's been huge. I think people have really struggled, and again, that's not new news in terms of we've all done it ourselves. I mean, you know, honest, I've definitely struggled a lot over the last couple of years, just you know, being able to adapt to life full stop, and you know, an intense job that is ambitious and keeps pushing, which is part of why I want to do it as well. So I think what Diligent have done well is they've created lots of options for people to get involved in different areas. And I think there's a difference between pushing a D&I strategy on a company, because to a certain extent you want to be seen to be doing it. I think to a certain extent in our software and in our DNA as a business, we allow companies to ensure that, you know, when it comes to gender balance, diversity in the workplace, that they have the right reporting and software to be able to ensure that they can do that respectfully and do that and make it a competitive advantage to a certain extent in terms of how people feel about working for the company. And we are no different. Like, I think we have a global head of DE&I, and we've created a number of employee resource groups and launched 7 new ones in the last 12 months alone that cover things like pride, cover things like mental health, women in tech, and different areas that people can gravitate towards where they have a passion or an affiliation towards. And I think that's an important piece for me when it comes to this. And I do similar in terms of, we have a club called the Culture Club in Diligent, where we've got 8 phenomenal volunteers who are creating different touch points and options to get involved. But for me, it's about creating options and not forcing a strategy upon people. And that's been an important part, I think, to our success in terms of how we've created different opportunities to join forums, join talks, join different Slack channels. We use Slack as a medium and use that very successfully, both professionally and from a personal development and personal support perspective, for people to gravitate towards areas and learn more things and be part of something if that's something they choose to do. So I think we've been very conscious of ensuring that there are some core themes that we drive and we stand up for. I think as a business, we're not shy about saying what we think about certain things out there as well when it comes to diversity and inclusion in particular. And you know, from our executive team right down, we have a very strong voice in terms of panel discussions, thought leadership pieces that we push out over social channels to show that we have an opinion on it and we're not just internally ticking a box on it. So I think it's a couple of things. I think from our perspective, it's ensuring that we're rowing in behind topics that matter, both locally and globally from a D&I perspective, but then ensuring that we have a broad remit of opportunities for staff to get involved if it's something they would like to do, and not ramming anything down someone's throat, because I think it can sometimes be positioned that way and sold that way that, you know, look at us, we do great D&I stuff because, you know, come join us because of that, rather than it should be a subtle but kind of open door policy where people can get involved if they choose to do so. Mm-hmm.
Kind of genuine policy, 100%. Mm-hmm. I suppose, Mary, coming back to the kind of remote aspect of what's been happening over the past couple of years, from our, I suppose, our own kind of client base and knowledge of the market, have there been any other challenges we've seen HR teams kind of face, or I suppose even have, is there anything we've seen particularly flourish, I suppose, in the kind of remote world that we have now?
I mean, there's a huge challenge at the moment about, you know, attracting candidates, sourcing candidates. I think that every HR person, every organization is struggling in that area because the world has opened up. And, you know, regional companies, you know, would have had an advantage to some extent, offering lifestyle at one point, and that advantage is gone to an extent because everybody can access, you know, a better quality of life now through home working and remote working, and so that's leveled again. So it does come back down to, you know, core values of an organization, and that's something we've looked at with a few of our clients around that whole idea. You know, are your core values relevant now, in the same way that they were relevant 2 years ago, 5 years ago, because people have changed in terms of the way in which they're thinking about their own lives, about what they want from the world of work, about the kind of hours they're prepared to work, the where, when, why really matters to people now. So I'm seeing that as an ongoing challenge for every organization. Everyone I know is struggling to fill roles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for organizations like Diligent that are really thoughtful about things like their onboarding, that does give an advantage because people talk, candidates talk, people talk in their communities. And if people like the program, if they like what they're experiencing, then that word gets out there and you become known as an organization to wish to work for. And isn't that what we all strive to do in terms of the brand that we mm-hmm. create and in terms of our positioning in the marketplace? So I think an awful lot of organizations need to focus there. What are we doing? Yeah. How do our employees experience our world? The last thing you want with any D&I strategy is for people to feel, well, if I'm not in one of these special groups, mm-hmm. then I can't get ahead. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing that as mm-hmm. well from individuals who feel, well, you know, I'm an Irish white guy in his mm-hmm. 30s. How am I going to get ahead in this organization? You know, and so you just have to be really, really careful in everything that you're doing, that you're thinking it through all the way across the organization, right the way across the business from the most senior to the most junior levels, and really thinking carefully about what are we about? What are we trying to do? There's trends out there. I'm not a big fan of following all of them, but, you know, if you're taking a really thoughtful and careful approach to any strategy that you put in place, what are we trying to achieve has to be fundamental to that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that one, Mary. Like, even just taking what you're saying there from, you know, getting your message out there and where we've actually created a brand new role in Diligent from an employee value proposition perspective, a branding manager that we're bringing into the business that we don't have in any other site, given the uniqueness of how we've established Diligent in Galway and the importance that we are delivering our message, identifying our niche in the marketplace and ensuring that we are communicating clearly to that niche. And, you know, that's a role we'll hopefully be getting to offer stage by next week. And it's an exciting role whereby, you know, the way I kind of view it is that we've got kind of four key audiences that I think of when it comes to our employer value proposition. It's our candidates and candidate, you know, it's about that attraction of talent and candidates in general. So there's a candidate experience. You then also have that employee experience critically. And then you've got the business, the community from a business perspective and community at large. And, you know, if they're the kind of four pillars of audiences that we want to ensure that really, this is why we've taken the step to put in place, you know, that position and that role is to drive that engagement and clarity and identity amongst those groups. And I think identity is probably the important word here. It's number one, identifying your niche that you as a business want to speak to and ensuring that you've got an identity that actually speaks honestly and truthfully and connects with that niche. Because gone are the days you can be all things to all people. And in the remote world, the importance of being able to be clear in who you are, define your employer value proposition clearly, and then be able to translate that EVP to those different niche audiences and do it in a consistent and delightful way is the most important things you have moving forward, because we've never seen competition for talent like we have. So we need to ensure that we speak to and engage the right talent that we know and have a better sense that once they engage with us as a brand, that they have a much better chance of having a long, long career and successful career Diligent because we've made that better match. And it's not just because it's a job that anyone out there should take it. It should be the right job. And it's the exact same advice I give the students that I lecture in NUIG. Like are the days that you should take any job, you absolutely shouldn't. You should do your research, your point, Mary, around the values of a company. There needs to be an emotional connection with what a company is trying to achieve, with what you personally value. And that's where, you know, that's what I meant, I think, as well earlier in terms of the shift of prioritization of what candidates, both, you know, young and less young, are looking for in a company is that match. So it feels a lot more like dating and long-term dating than we did in the past. We're trying to find partners for the long term, both personally and professionally here. And I think candidates are and have the luxury to be able to shop around a lot more to ensure that they're making the right match and not just a match. And it's on companies to ensure that A, you've got a clear identity, and B, you know who your audience are that you want to communicate that identity to. And you know, do not be wasteful in how you communicate that, you know, who that audience is that you're communicating to.
Isn't it terrifying that from an organizational perspective and from a HR perspective that the average time in which, you know, a 20 to 30 year old is likely to stay in an organization has reduced down to just over 1 year?
Yeah.
And what does that mean for you know, our hiring practices, our sourcing, our selection, you know, if that's what we can expect, then how do we push that retention rate up? Because, you know, if you looked back at probably 5 years ago, you were probably talking at least 2 to 5 years in terms of retention. And now that's changed again. And so somebody moving between roles, you know, back in the day, we might have categorized them in HR as job hoppers. Mm-hmm. Well, now that's the norm. And, you know, it's really interesting from a HR perspective of what can you do to keep people engaged for longer?
Yeah. I think this, my view on that is, I think for too long, the long forgotten part of a business is that frontline manager who's getting the pressure bottom up, is getting the pressure bottom down, and is in one of those burnout situations where they're just trying to survive to a certain extent. And the value of a manager in survival is actually probably accelerating and driving that 1 year tenure. I think companies really need to look at their bands of span of controls for managers in terms of how many direct reports they give them. really need to look at what are the core impacts of a manager. There's no point having a job spec and 20 or 30 priorities. They can't all be the priorities. Like, boil it down to the two or three things that a manager needs to nail every day. Otherwise, you know, that's where they should be spending their time. I think it's really zoning in on the impact a manager can make, because I think they're the non-transferable components of working for a company. I think company A and company B have salary, they have benefits, they have career ladders, they have all of these things. So they're, you know, that's a more of a binary type of kind of decision making. But the piece that you can take with you is how you are engaged with and developed by your manager or the business. And, you know, too often I think HR, you know, by the time a problem comes to HR, it's probably too late, more often than not, when it comes to an employee relations situation. And this is where the importance of investing in that smaller group of scalable individuals that influence the experience in the company, i.e. the frontline managers, for me, is an effort to try and challenge that 1 year turnaround time that we're seeing with younger staff. Because again, that's the piece that if you're going to make a decision between a higher salary and better benefits in a slightly, you know, different positioned role, but you can't take that mentor, that guide, that person that you know in your heart has taken you so far, what value do you put on that? Would you put 10% salary on it? An extra couple of days holidays on it? They're the decisions that we need to put people into, I believe. And it's on companies to bring that invisible benefit, and which is the skill and ability of a manager to make people feel a certain way and develop them in a meaningful way. And that goes back to asking open-ended questions, to really actively listening, to really understanding the personalities and drives of their employees, and to be going out on a limb to develop them. And development is skills improvement, it's not promotion. And ensuring that people know that on a quarterly basis, they're moving from A to B and making that progress around their 12-month development plan. It's knowing and feeling that, I think, that can help address some of those job hopping situations, which are happening even much quicker than that. I see there's folks hopping within the first 3 months. And because of this remote environment, you don't need to leave or go too far to have an interview. So you're having situations where people are constantly interviewing, even after they've started new jobs, and they're, to a certain extent, sometimes playing the market to see what it will return. That's an element I'm probably more concerned about.
Yeah, and I don't think yet that there's enough training and development of remote managers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of managers are still managing as they have always managed. They just happen to be doing it over video call now at the moment, in Ireland at any rate. And I think that is a challenge for organizations. Mm-hmm. You know, HR obviously will deal with the tough situations and the exiting of employees. But as you say, once the notice is given and someone's leaving, doing an exit interview is not the way to resolve the problem. It's far more important that HR understand why people are staying and what they want and what would encourage them to stay than it is to figure out alone why they're leaving. That's important. But in this kind of environment, we really need to understand and hear the voice of our employees to understand what do they want, what's going to keep them, mm-hmm. and what's going to attract them.
Yeah, sorry. I think therein, Mary, lies the evolution of the frontline manager in terms of their responsibilities. It needs to be much more in the you know, spotting the cracks before there's a problem. Like, it's more about the EQ. It's more about how they with HR to be able to stave off HR situations before it becomes a situation in terms of a negative situation. And that shift, I would agree. I think it's something that we're all figuring out and trying to catch up with. But I think at the end of the day, take Diligent, for example, I think we're only as good as our people. And whenever any company thinks that they have a divine right to be successful because they've got great products and a great brand and all of these things, is the day that they're probably signing their kind of their letter of exit as a company, because you can't in any ways be successful as a business if the people in the business don't feel that they're the most important thing. And again, whether we like it or not, frontline managers will always influence that much more than any of us ever can. So I think continuously engaging that level, getting them excited about their careers, because it's very hard for them to make their people excited about their careers if they're not excited themselves. So ensuring that you have your personal development plan is front in space for your managers, bring them in and having a seat at the senior leadership table to be part of something bigger, increase their accountability, make them feel more empowered, and ensuring they have a clear identity in the eyes of their people. And I think more than anything else, they need to be amazing coaches. Like, that's the tangible piece. If you can develop someone personally and professionally, and they can see the manager as the person that can really enable that directly, as well as indirectly, but particularly directly, that's when it's difficult to give up that resource, which is much more valuable than a few extra grand a year.
And time, Rory, isn't it so important? You know, if you don't put into a job's description, retention, mm-hmm. coaching, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. some of those key areas, if you don't KPI it, if you don't mm-hmm. ask people to deliver results based on certain metrics, then that won't happen. And so often, with the very best intentions, if the team is too large, you can't mentor and coach. If you're manager is technical and central to the progression of an organization mm-hmm. and actually has a massive workload themselves, you also won't be able to spend the time mentoring and coaching people. So it does come back to looking at that role and mm-hmm. thinking about what it should be, mm-hmm. because it's there that you can make the greatest impact. And that's where I see HR, you know, where it's most valuable to an organization is not dealing with an exit. It's looking at what as an organization could we do differently? How could we train our people differently? Do we need to reimagine the role of a manager?
Mm-hmm. 100% agree.
And a smaller organization has a better opportunity to do that than a larger organization. You know, so therein lies your advantage.
Exactly. Or even large organizations, I think, can make that shift. But back to your point, the spans of control of direct reports to manager need to be in a space where, for me, it needs to be lower than pre-pandemic, because when you're working hybrid and remotely, you need to have more time to be able to ensure that people feel a certain way in the 1 hour slot that you have with them, because you can't see them walk away or see them on the floor or other visual cues that give you that inclination whether that landed or not. So therefore, fail to prepare, prepare to fail is more true now than ever. And therefore, lower spans of control for any manager, full stop, to allow more time to prepare to deliver when you have that opportunity to make someone feel a certain way, whether it's a one-to-one, a team meeting, a coaching session. Flying by the seat of your pants isn't going to keep people in an organization.
I think I know we're kind of still in this pandemic situation, still ever evolving. But it does certainly feel like a time where HR and leaders and organizations kind of sit back just for a moment and start to plan for 2022 and look at all the information that's out there. Because obviously podcasts like this, all the reports we're seeing, Rory, there is definitely information out there, which is fantastic. So I suppose kind of final question for you both, and maybe yourself first, Mary. I suppose, what can HR teams kind of do to start thinking about next year? How can they learn from success stories like this one?
Good question, Owen. It's look out there and see what's happening out there in the world, because stories like Rory's and Diligence show us that there's some very exciting things happening. And what can you as a HR team do to make your own induction program original, not just to be copied, or not just to copy what you hear out there, but to really look at, well, what can we do that's original, that will give us a competitive advantage, that will attract and retain people? So I think creativity is a huge area. It's not traditionally a space where HR people are strong, but I do think when it comes to the changing role of HR, you know, embracing things like marketing, creativity, change management and adaptability, these are the key skills that HR people need to be building. And when we're looking to the future, it's all about, well, if that's what an organization like Diligent is doing and we're competitors of theirs, what do we need to do differently? If we're a large organization, how can we bring about change on some of those key areas?
Yeah, I suppose same question to yourself then, Rory. I think collaboration is probably one of the key words to pluck out of that for yourselves even as well, is it?
Yeah, 100%. I think even the best managers that I've ever worked with and that are thriving at the moment are really in the area of HR. So I think where HR professionals can help train the trainer and develop managers to be empathetic, to be good listeners, to have all of those, you know, be really strong when it comes to delivering feedback, all of these emotive things, I think the better that we can arm management and organizations themselves to do that, the more successful we'll be. I think having, you know, the HR influence front and center of how we lead and how we run organizations, I think has been more important now that it runs through as the DNA of a company rather than even a HR function, which sits beside the, or within the organization. It needs to feel that it's business as usual, that we have career conversations. And just because, and I noticed that you weren't feeling, you know, you didn't seem yourself the last day. It's those type of conversations that sometimes managers shy away from, and particularly in the virtual environment, it's easier maybe not to have those kind of conversations. So I think the seat of HR is now front and center of how we develop and empower great people managers, and they need to be very, very strong from a HR perspective, personally, and confident and able and aligned to be able to ensure that they can, in the moment, have those type of meaningful conversations with their staff. And I see HR very much moving to continue to be that business partner that is project managing the successful management group, that is living and breathing the values, the mission, and all the other things that make a great organization that HR is, you know, driving. So I think that collaboration between management and HR should start to blur, whereby it just becomes a BAU that what we do is, and how we hire managers, it should all, they should have that DNA of great people managers that HR can coach and develop rather than teach. Because I think if we're hiring leaders that need to be taught some of the fundamentals of how we engage staff and retain staff, then we're probably fighting a bit of a losing battle in terms of the time it'll take to get someone to. So I think therein lies the nuance of how we recruit as people who are naturally very high EQ and have, you know, a tendency towards putting the person first and getting the best out of people. And I think HR have a huge, huge role to play to help guide companies to make that shift, to your point earlier, Mary, of being very strong managers right throughout the organization, but particularly in that frontline manager level.
So I think I suppose a lot to think about, a lot to learn, I suppose, with stories like this, Rory. So we're delighted to chat to you. I suppose there's a lot of opportunities there for HR to really kind of maximize those opportunities and look at that kind of changing role and plan for 2022. So thank you, Rory and Mary, for a very insightful discussion. Hopefully jam-packed with takeaways there for companies who want to start thinking about next year and beyond. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Rory.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.